sharing. I'm not so joined in this season. If you're new here, this is your safe space to get the clarity you need for your daily decisions and to help you to live the kind of life that God intended. I am Mima, and this is my husband.
I am Yinka.
And we're so glad to be on the episode today with you. So Yinka, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, today we'll be talking about marriage as God intends. And, you know, from scriptures, we learn that marriage should be a place of joy, a place of peace. Marriage should be a beautiful thing. Marriage should be enjoyable. It should actually be heaven on earth. And God intends that there will be full expression of His love in marriage.
Mm. But you know, sometimes marriage has challenges.
Absolutely.
So many challenges, lots of ups and downs.
Mm.
So what happens when the marriage is headed for the rocks?
Mm.
On this episode, I sit with Natasha Drisdale, an entrepreneur, a wife, and a mom of three children, as she shares her story of encouragement, her story of rising again, her story of restoration and hope, all summed up in her book, The Wise Wife Blueprint.
How did you start? Where are you from? What do you do? You know, that sort of thing.
Of course. Yeah, in the nutshell, I guess. So, my name is Natasha Drisdale, and I have been married now for 20 years. The Wise Wife Blueprint is really, it's based on my personal story of being completely disillusioned with marriage and feeling like I got completely hoodwinked, especially growing up in the church. And then sort of my come to Jesus moment of having my marriage fall apart and then realizing that there was some personal responsibility that I needed to take. And then the fight to save that marriage, despite my husband not wanting anything to do with me or with our marriage. And so really that idea of like, can one person alone fight to save a marriage? And that is our story and the story of many of the other women in the book and just hundreds of women and men too, that I have since met and heard their stories that are similar. So it's not as odd as one might think, even though in our culture, it's very counterculture. Even in the church. So yeah, the book is like it's not really a memoir as much as it is. I mean, it has stories, obviously personal stories and stories of other women, but it's really like a manual for wifehood, that kind of fully flies in the face of our current culture and what we're kind of being told, a successful woman and wife is. And I had that the way the world does it, and it really sucked and didn't work out so well for me. And so I tried it God's way, and the book is really just all about that and how it can be better than we think going God's way. Imagine that.
Amazing, Natasha. You know, I read your book and it was just really interesting about how you kind of just captivated the audience just reading and seeing how you literally had your marriage almost crash right before your very eyes. And, you know, one would sit back and be like, okay, what really happened? How did he come this far? So maybe I'll throw it as a question, Natasha.
Cool.
How did you meet your husband? Because sometimes I feel like we can kind of backtrack a bit. I'm like, okay, what really happened?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, give me like the nitty gritty. And I always come out, I love doing podcast interviews because something different comes out of every interview, which I love. And whether, you know, just different parts of my story and stuff that's not in the book. This is actually really great. We met in a worship band. So, you know, come to find out that, again, I told you I was disillusioned with marriage. Yeah, I was really young when we met, which is not a bad thing. I just want to put that out there. The enemy loves to use that against us when we get married young and be like, oh, you were too young and you were stupid and you were foolish. And you just should just divorce him because like you were young. Anyways, so I just want to make sure I'm clear about that. But really, I think the biggest issue of just how young we were is I just had a really preconceived notion of like what a husband is. And I think we all do, no matter what age we are. But, you know, I kind of picked all of the good pieces of men in my life that I thought a husband should be. And I failed to, you know, realize that any of them had negative parts of them. And then I put that entire sort of expectation on my husband, who was a broken hot mess, as we say in the South, a hot mess. And that was just like a real shocker for me. Cause we met in a worship band and, you know, I thought I was marrying a Christian man and I thought that this was what God wanted me to do. And then I just handled it really poorly, in how I handled my hurt and disappointment and thank goodness in where we were from in Canada at the time, you have to be separated for a year because, I mean, you're saying that my marriage almost crashed. In a lot of ways, I feel like it was decimated. And the only thing that kept us from signing divorce papers was because we had to wait a year. Otherwise, I guarantee that those papers would have been served and signed. So it was a huge like wake up call to, after 8 years of marriage, be told, hey, I'm leaving you. And I talk really clearly in the book about that story, you know, how that kind of came at me out of left field, but really the writing was on the wall. For years, I had been so hurt that I eventually stopped caring. And I talk to a lot of women and readers who reach out. And that's something that I talk about a lot, is how dangerous it is to stop hurting. I mean, none of us want to hurt, but the moment you stop hurting, you are in a very dangerous place. You are very vulnerable to the enemy and to his tactics. And it's a very, very dangerous place to be when you stop hurting, because it means you've shut down. And if you are not hurting, that means you also are not being intentional with trying to grow and make it better. It just means you've given up. You've given up. So if you're complacent and you're not feeling anything, it might feel like in the short term, you think that it's better. But for me and for all the women that I've ever worked with or counseled, guaranteed that's like a final warning sign of you need a Hail Mary, like, miracle. And that's where I was, you know, I was in that place. And actually my husband said that he was really shocked when I responded to him leaving with, wanting to work on things. Like it wasn't like, hey, let's go to counseling. Hey, let's, it was like, I'm done. This marriage is over. We are through. Moved out. And he was so shocked, and I'll never forget. And I think that a lot of women, if they're really honest with themselves, could relate to this. He looked at me and he said, why do you care? Like, I'm literally doing you a favor. I'm being the bad guy and I'm leaving. Like, you don't love me. You don't even like me. Why do you care? And it's true. I didn't like him at that time. I hated him, actually. So that was, that's the dangerous part. When you stop hurting, it leads to bitterness and hurt and resentment, and in a different way, right? So that's where we met, to answer that question in a long roundabout way.
Sure. Natasha, you know, just towards the end, you did mention something. Your husband was shocked. Why are you pushing this? What's, is there some, like, you don't like me, you don't love me, and yet you're doing this. Why were you doing it at that time?
Great question. I can say that in the first 2 days after he left, I kind of moped around and just was a mess. And then it's 2 days in, I just fell on my face before the Lord. And honestly, at this point, because again, and I'll go back to this, if you stop hurting, you're cutting yourself off spiritually. And the moment that I was like, forget it. I'm done with this. I'm not going to let him hurt me anymore. So I'm just going to stop loving him. I'm going to stop caring about him. The moment you do that, you're opening up yourself to the enemy and you're closing yourself off to God, right? So my spiritual walk, my faith weakened year over the years after making that decision to the point where I wasn't really serving the Lord at all. I was very, I would have said I was a Christian and I know I was saved, but it was like very shallow. And so 2 days after he left was when I really thanked the good Lord. I really just was humbled and came to him asking the Lord, you know, what do I do? I need you. Dusted off my Bible, which I had never really read fully, even though I grew up in the church and was a worship leader and was a youth leader and all those things. And I really, for the first time, dug into a personal relationship with God that was like really my own. And that was, I think, to answer your question, that's what gave me the charge to do what I did, to be steadfast. It was completely, I'd say, like marching orders from the Lord. And I've seen that happen to many other people in my situation, or similar situations. And if you ask him, you just have to be careful what you ask for, because he loves marriage and he hates divorce, right? Mm-hmm. And so he loves to use marriages as, I think he loves to use marriage as a symbol. Obviously, we see it throughout the whole Bible, but even just our earthly marriages as a symbol of connection with the Father and the grace that he has given us. We see that in just how he talks about men and women coming together in intimacy and what a representation it is of the Father. I mean, there's just so, you could go so deep on that. Mm-hmm. And I will say that's one of the things that I love the most about our story is that it's just like a redemptive story of someone not quitting and not giving up. And I don't take credit for that, to be clear. Yes, I was the one who did, stand in the gap, so to speak. But ultimately, I was very, very grateful that that was my position, because I knew full well that I could have easily been the one in Tim's shoes, in my husband's shoes. I could have been the one with the hard heart that was just completely hopeless. And so, yeah, that was definitely my marching orders by the Lord that I feel I got every time I opened my Bible, which I did a lot over that year. I read my Bible back and forth probably 3 times in that year, which again, like I said, I had never read before, really read. And there was just so much rich reward that eventually I wanted to. It wasn't even really much of a duty.
Right. There's just that beautiful thing I hear as I listen to you, Natasha. I just hear that beauty in coming to your knees, you know, coming from that place of, you know, like God, you know, and then you realize everything is crashing right before your eyes. And you then realize that you can't do this by yourself and you need God. And then you humble yourself and go back to God. I'm like, God, here, help me.
Seriously, the best thing that ever happened to me. It's great that like our marriage is amazing. I mean, I will say that we've now, you know, we separated at the 8-year mark. We were separated for a year. It was 2 more years after that before my husband even loved me again. A couple years after that, before he came back to the Lord and was no longer an atheist. And so now fast forward to today, you know, we're almost 21 years in, and post-separation, you know, 10 years post-separation, it's like a completely different marriage. All that is amazing. I'm so thankful. We have 2 children. We haven't talked about that, but we had 2 twin boys. When we first separated, they were 3. And so now they're 16 and they have a complete and whole family, which is nothing short of a miracle. And then of course we had another child just a few years ago So now we have a daughter who wouldn't even exist if it weren't for us getting back together. So all that is amazing. But I will say, even besides all of that, it was the most, it was the best thing that could have happened to me, because I cannot and don't want to imagine what my life would have been like had I not been rocked like that. If I had not have been humbled, and if I hadn't, I would say fall on my knees, but like I fell on my face. It was just like, you know, desperation. And that's where I actually have this thing that I say all the time now when I'm praying and just as I'm reflecting on myself. It's, Lord, please help me to be willingly humble, because I never want to be humbled by you again. I just don't, I mean, it was amazing. It was what I needed, but man, did it suck. I don't want that. I don't want to have to learn lessons that way. So can you please just help me to be teachable and to be willingly humble? That has poured over into so many other areas of my life, which is why I can say, I mean, obviously it's easier now in hindsight, but even in the midst of my trial, I was able to thank God for it. And that's really, really important, because we can be pleading with the Lord to deliver us from something and fighting this spiritual battle to get, you know, an answer to something that we need. But if we are not thankful in the pleading and in the crying out to him, if we're not grateful, even for the trial, I don't see him delivering us, you know, like I just don't see it. Maybe that's happened for some people, but I have not seen it. And that's really, really counterculture and counter flesh, right? Like it's not what our flesh wants to do. And yet there's so much power when we can say, Father, I need you to XYZ. Okay. For me, it was like, I need my husband back. I need my marriage to be restored, but I want a better marriage. I want a different marriage. I know you're building me into someone new and different. So I know no matter what, even if Tim doesn't change, my marriage will be better. But even despite, like, I have no idea when that will happen, thank you for this trial, because, and then, you know, sometimes I'd have to like pray and ask the Holy Spirit to even tell me what to be thankful for, because I was so blinded to it from all of the hurt. And every time he would give it to me. But I just think that that is, if you're looking for a spiritual tool, if you're looking for a boost, if you're looking for just something to get you out of this like desperation and hopelessness that it's so easy to find yourself in when you're seeking God for answers. Great gratitude and thankfulness and praise connects us with the Father in a way that is so powerful, but it also disconnects us with the enemy who comes to steal, kill, and destroy, right? Because if we're saying, hey, Satan, like, yeah, you literally have put my marriage in a dumpster fire and I helped you with that, fully take ownership of how much I helped you and I was a pawn of your plans and I willingly helped you and I repent of that. But ultimately, like that dumpster fire, if I'm actually praising God for it and thanking him for it, you now have no control over me. Like I just basically took away all your steam, because what does he have left then?
True.
So I think that that's one tactic for sure to use if you're feeling really like desperate for God to come to your aid. Mm. Have you been grateful for it? Not just grateful for like, oh, I'm thankful I have a house and I'm thankful that I have a roof over my head and food on my table. Like, come on. No. You want big answers to big prayers? You got to do hard things. And that is dying to yourself and saying, thank you for this trial. Teach me what I need to know from it. Show me what I need to learn from it. Open my spiritual eyes. Help me. And thank you for this. Like, if you get your heart to that place, watch out, because big things will happen.
Wow, Natasha, I'm like, this is so profound. This is so, so profound. And at this point, we're wrapping up. And I just want you to kind of just tell a bit more for those who are listening right now. And this month, we're talking about You know, it's February, it's love and relationship. And, you know, we're talking about these things that are quite important in marriage and, you know, with ourselves as men and women. If there are like three big things that you learned from that experience that, you know, changed you, and now every time you get a chance to speak to other women and men, when you get a chance to, you know, like you get to tell them these things and possibly from your book, what would those be?
Ooh, okay. Let's see. Okay, well, there are so many things, but I'm gonna say some things that come to mind for sure. I mean, most people that I talk to are in really dire straits, right? Like their marriages are falling apart. And I would say one of the biggest things that I want to let people know is that there is hope, that just because someone says, I don't want to be with you anymore. I mean, we're talking covenant of marriage here. Okay. This is just to make sure everyone understands. I'm talking about the covenant of marriage. It doesn't mean that the story is over. It's when both people give up is when a marriage ends. Our world will tell us that it's when one person walks away. And I would say our God is bigger than that. And you can go to him and he will, I mean, ask him what you're supposed to do next. Like I said, getting that sort of marching orders. Another big one I think that is just really difficult right now, because it's so common in our culture, is the power of submission, which I guess is kind of an oxymoron in some ways, but it's not. There is great power in learning how to submit and what that really means. And I talk a lot about that in the book. And I think I almost named the chapter Why Submission is the Four-Letter Word of the Bible, but I don't think I did. I think that got pulled out. But I feel like, you know, it's that scandalous to talk about submission as a woman. I mean, heaven forbid that you would be this weak-willed woman. Well, no, actually submission requires great internal fortitude and strength and spiritual wisdom, and is so powerful and will bring amazing and huge breakthrough in your husband. It's when we actually stop trying to change him that we then can let God change him, right? And when we finally take the like emphasis off of him and put it on ourselves. And then like, lastly, I think just tied to that, another thing that I like to, I got so many nuggets of things that people say, like, that's the thing that sets me free. That's the thing. Let's just say the thing that's coming to mind though, right now, is I really do believe that God has made us as women the more intuitive, maybe more spiritual, connect, like easily, we more easily connect spiritually with the Father. And that's just not theology. That's just my personal opinion. I'm sure there's some theology back there for that, but just in case someone's fact checking me. And yet here's where we go wrong. So like, I feel that we do as women have a very deep and a connection with the Spirit, where we can get these insights, like spiritual intuition, that our husbands do not have, mm-hmm. or maybe have in a different way, or, you know, just, it's just different. Mm-hmm. Here's where it gets really unfortunate, like twist though. As always, the enemy takes what is good and he twists it and he tries to manipulate it to turn it into bad. And where we as women in this day and age, especially, go really wrong, and maybe this was always, but is we get that intuition that the Holy Spirit is almost leading us into what we see is broken in our husband. And instead of doing what the Bible commands us to do, which is to love our husband in spite of that weakness, and then be on our hands and knees in our prayer closet, praying for breakthrough and growth and supporting him as a teammate, our husband as a teammate, so that he can have that safe place where he can actually grow and change. Mm-hmm. Instead of doing that, we nag, We take it upon ourselves to change him. We take it upon ourselves to teach him. We take it upon ourselves to educate him or communicate our
feelings.
Because
I feel like I know stuff already that you don't. So let me tell you what to do, right?
And we completely cripple what God could do in his life because we say, you know what, God, I got this. Thank you for that. I've got this. Mm-hmm. And God says, I mean, he's just like, okay, well, I'm going to let that blow up in your face. Because I'm not, as a good father, I'm not going to like reward you for that bad behavior and change your husband. I'm going to let you come to your own end. And then maybe you'll give me a shot to do this. And so that's one thing that I would say as women in this very much like our generation, our entire culture is just like, you know, express how you feel and really like wear the pants essentially, right? I would say try it. If that's not working for you, you might want to try a better way, which is in your prayer closet in secret and fasting and praying for breakthrough in your husband while you love him and pray for God to fill your heart with love for him, despite the ways that he might be hurting your feelings, essentially, right? Or not being there for you the way he should. And watch what God does. That's what I would say there.
Absolutely, Natasha. I hear you loud and clear when you talk about the culture today and how, you know, there's that whole thing about feminism and, you know, women rights and that everyone's an activist these days and you're, you know, like women, you know, you have a right. We do have rights, yes, but in a marriage, in the context of a marriage, there is order. And God had created it that way. And he made the man the head. And then the woman is there as a help meet for him.
Yeah.
And so it's not like it's, you know, it's your turn. Like I'm the one who's the boss. It's no use fighting for anything. Like there's that order already.
And you hit the nail on the head. You have a right. You have a right to be hurt. And you have a right to be upset. And we have rights to feel a lot of things. But the question is, where's the fruit when you when you give in to feeling those rights and you're entitled to that hurt? I'm entitled to be to feel this injustice. Well, okay, that's great, but what's it getting you? Because that's not breakthrough. That's not where God comes in and brings about change. When we sit there and we stand on our rights while we sin and justify our sin with our rights. Well, you did this. So now I get to fill in the blanks, but it's sin. It's sin that's filling in the blanks, right? So even if it's justified in our worldly way or our fleshly way of understanding things, it's not what God's calling us to do. And it really does, in the end, hurt us more. So
Right. I'm going to wrap it up here. And I'm just like, this book is so powerful. I read it and I'm just like, wow, powerful book. I feel like everyone should go get it. And Natasha, if people want to get your book, The Wise Wife Blueprint, how do they get a copy of your book?
Yeah, you can. It's available on Amazon in quite a few countries. And then also online for people who are listening in the United States, they can buy it at wisewifeblueprint.com if they want a signed copy. And then for anyone else who's outside of the US, Amazon's your best bet. And you can find me on Instagram at wisewifeblueprint.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Natasha.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.